Welcome to the Conversations with a Coach podcast. I'm your host, Tanya Filer, and I'm a mindset and life coach and lover of great conversations. Some of the ideas, beliefs, and opinions you hear discussed on the podcast might not align with your own, but I would like to challenge you to stay curious and open-minded. If you can do that, you can find value in any conversation and create new perspectives. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you. So today's guest, Andrew Tracy, somebody that I first connected to on social media a few years back. He's local to me. I quite often see him when I'm out on my daily walks down the Flitchway, which is a beautiful outside area close by me. Anyway, today's podcast is quite a long one, but you will soon get the flow from our conversation and understand that a lot of the ideas that we talk about require nuance and context. So we go into a couple of issues quite deep, especially around things like gatekeeping fitness, what fitness should look like, and why it's not always accessible for people. Really enjoyed today's podcast. I always have a great time chatting to Andrew. Here it is. Hello and welcome to another episode of Conversations with a Coach podcast. Today I have somebody that I have had the pleasure of talking to on his podcast, somebody that I find super interesting from a content creation perspective. His name is Andrew Tracy. Many of you will have heard of him. If you haven't, he's the Men's Health UK fitness editor. He is somebody that's incredibly vocal around fitness content. I'll let him tell you a little bit more about what he does, what he stands for, and what's important to him. Andrew, thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate
it. Thank you for having me. I feel like I've got a lot to live up to after the illustrious introduction. Thank you very much for that. I'm blushing.
So tell us about yourself, like your background, what you do, how you help, and what your vision is from like the work that you're doing.
Yeah, I'll try and keep the background succinct, but do speed me up if I'm waffling. But oddly, I was thinking about this the other day, actually. I always think of myself as a little bit of I'm going to say outsider in fitness, but I don't mean that in a dramatic way. I don't mean that like I'm an outsider. I just mean like I didn't play sports and stuff growing up. So it's always felt a little bit like fitness was something I got into later on in life. But as I age, as we all do, I came to the realization the other day that I've actually been in fitness for more than half my life now. So I suppose I've got to stop. I took my first job in a gym when I was 16 or 17. I can't remember exactly, but it was first impactful. So I guess I've got to stop saying that I'm the late comer to fitness because it's more of my life now than it isn't. But took a job in a gym 16, 17, literally for beer money at that age, as you do. Had no interest in fitness previous to that. I actually think I disliked organized fitness. I didn't play football or any of the common sort of British hallmarks of growing up and where I grew up. If only really the kids on the posher side of town played rugby, so I didn't play rugby. Disliked football, just wasn't raising it. Just had no interest in sports, and I was just an absolute toe rag growing up. So I was I can't say too much because I don't know what the statute of limitations on some of the worst things are, but. So I guess looking back now, knowing what I know, I had a degree of fitness, decent energy systems development, I guess, from running away a lot. But I was never interested in fitness. So I took this job in a gym just for beer money. And it was probably the first time in a long time because we all kind of taper off towards the end of school. I don't know about you, but a lot of people I know and myself taper off towards the end of sort of formal education in interest, right? It's something you're forced to do, and it's very much like this. It's very telic, like let's just get through this, let's get it over with. And I had no interest in learning again once I was out of school. I like really rebelled, really rallied against it. I was passably bright, but maybe a little bit too much for my own good, in that I realized I could just do the bare minimum and get away with it. And like almost like an unsaid thing with my teachers of like, look, it's not the greatest school in the world, so you just need those A to C's. I'll give them to you. Just leave me alone, and then we'll all be grand type thing. Took this job in the gym, and I felt really. I don't know if initially it was just from sitting behind a counter in a bodybuilding gym for 8 to 10 hours a day, that the books and magazines were there to read. So I just did as something to do. And it was a real spit and sawdust bodybuilding type gym. But the guys who trained there, despite being like these huge bodybuilder type guys at the time, they would have been like the doorman, like the bouncers. And yeah. I was in them that sort of formative age where I was starting to go out drinking. So these were people who ostensibly would have been like the most intimidating people in the world. But because of the environment I was in, I got to meet them and know them in a very different way. And they were great guys. And I feel very privileged to have started my own personal training journey there, where I met these guys and was able to train there as opposed to going straight into a commercial gym environment. I don't think I would have, if I'd gone and worked doing a sort of reciprocal job in a commercial gym, I don't think I would have stayed. But yeah, I was so interested and just spent all day, every day, sort of reading, getting educated, went through the usual bits and pieces of becoming a fitness instructor, then a personal trainer, and then quite a bit later on, becoming certified as a nutritionist, et cetera, et cetera. And went and did the kind of usual thing of went and got a job in the city, went into London and worked at various big commercial gyms there. Thinking at the time that was the right thing to do. It seemed like a fairly linear progression and probably still something people do to this day, but it just absolutely saps the joy out of it for me. It did, being in those moments. And I think because I was still quite young, like 20, early 20s, and probably the idea of being on the 10 past 5 train out of Epping every morning on the tube and not getting home till 9 o'clock at night, it was that probably did play a really big role in it. And there were the things were kind of, it was around this time I had my daughter as well, so we're going back many years, but that on top of everything else, and it just wasn't where I wanted to be. And I found myself not wanting to continue. I wasn't enjoying my own training. I didn't want to further my own development in my career. And it wasn't so much that my career was important to me, it was that my love of fitness was very important to me, my love of training. And suddenly I'm in this environment where I've got access to, there's a seminar every weekend, and a lot of the gyms I would work at had ongoing education programs with incredible coaches. And I just wasn't interested. And that really knocked me, not being interested, but the kind of the meta aspect of, I don't want to not be interested. I want to be interested. A few years elapsed like that, really. And I decided I wanted to take a break and do something outside of fitness to make money and then kind of just keep get one foot in there on a personal level, but also keep, and we're talking back pre-remote coaching really at this point in time.
Yeah.
And I was really lucky in that a few of my clients that I worked with really enjoyed what we were doing and asked me if I could keep programming for them. So before any sort of remote coaching platform even existed, I was doing that, and I have continued to do that ever since. I work with a handful of people who their training interested me, and they were, I'm grateful that they wanted me to carry on in that fashion. From there, at the same time as doing those things, I would write for anybody who would read or publish my thoughts on things. And I went to work in the event sector, which was supposed to just be doing events, laboring initially. And that was just to be like a sort of stopgap, just to get some money together, figure out what I wanted to do and figure some things out. And I only very recently, I'm 34. Is that early or mid 30s? That's mid 30s at this point, isn't it?
Early to mid.
Now, yeah. And it was only a few years ago that my like final hand in that business finished. So it was supposed to be a stopgap, but it went on for a decade. I ran a business in events construction for the longest time with my brothers. Lucky enough to have my family working with me for me. And at the same time, I carried on my personal and professional pursuits in fitness. And all of that's really informed kind of my work ethic now. And this is not any sort of highfalutin philosophy, but I don't really prescribe to the idea of you have to do one thing or this is my job, this is my identity. I'm very lucky to be in a position where I just get to be me and do the things I get to do, even if they branch off out in lots of crazy directions. Carried on remote coaching, got Instagram at some point, and I was sharing the training I was doing while I was traveling with my events business, which is to say I'm staying in service stations and I was training in car parks. And that, I think, became my kind of quote unquote like thing.
Yeah.
And initially I was doing it just to stay in shape or get in shape or whatever it may be. But then I kind of took my, fortunate enough to have like an education, a background in fitness, and what how far can I take this? So I do, I'd enter this competition or that competition or this race or that race and see how I can, how I could take my education in fitness and then apply that to the circumstances I had. I'm traveling all over the country. I'm staying in crappy hotels. I'm training in the rain at night in car parks. How can I make that work in order to take on these challenges? And that kind of, I guess, became my niche, for want of a better word. I was writing about these things in Men's Health as a contributor for a while. And I was really fortunate a few years back. They asked me if I would come on board as the full-time fitness editor. That's still my position to this day. So I have a big section in the mag where I expound on all my thoughts on fitness and actionable stuff there, and carry on doing. It feels strange to talk about social media because it's only 30 days, but I've just been off of there for 30 days. So what do I do on there? What is that? But I do the same thing everybody else does. I do the same thing everybody else does, which is, I guess, post things that would have been helpful for me or that I think would be helpful for people based on my niche, my experience and my knowledge, and hope that it resonates with people, I guess. Yeah, I mean, that's, have I missed anything out there? No, I mean, that's the kind of potted story of me.
Yeah, that's your transition.
Pick up from there wherever you want.
Yeah, so there are a couple of things in there that I want to kind of pick out and expand upon, if that's okay. So I came to know who you were through, you're obviously based locally to me, and I saw your content being shared through another fitness facility here, and I picked up on the fact that you obviously had this job where you needed to travel a lot, so the events construction, and I would look at your content and see you hoofting about like a homemade sandbag in a multi-story car park smack bang in the centre of like Birmingham or Leeds or Leicester. And just your tagline was, you are not your gym membership. And just kind of enforcing this idea that fitness isn't a location and health isn't a specific program or methodology or mode, that if you're moving your body and if you're putting yourself through physical exertion, then that was fitness. And it was really refreshing to see that kind of content. Like, it was like, I don't know anybody that's ever done anything remotely like that. But you were also quite extreme with some of the things that you were doing, like the competitions and the level of, I guess, physical stress that you would put your body under. So the long days with physical work, because event construction is not sitting at a desk drawing pictures of what an event stage might look like. It's hard physical graft, right? You're lumping bits of metal and boxes and stuff around continuously. And then finding 20 minutes, 40 minutes at the end of the day to pick up a homemade sandbag or throw a rope over a construction that you've put up that day and start climbing it at like 11 o'clock at night. And it was refreshing. It was interesting. It was also like awesome, like in the true definition of the word awesome. It was like, how the fuck does this guy, like, how do you do that stuff? But then I have noticed over the last couple of years that you have shifted more into a manageable kind of, what's not resonant, but attainable way of fitness. Does that make sense? Does that sound true? Does that ring true for you? Was that something that you were consciously doing, or was it something that just gradually happened as like a life transition?
No, I think the underlying, I think what, it seems strange now at the back end of having all of the COVID-19 lockdowns and what they meant for gyms, etc., that it was easy to kind of read, yeah, that my website was youarenotyourgymmembership.com. That was the sort of Fight Club-esque mantra. And it would be easy to read that at the surface level. Yeah, like the idea was you can train anywhere. But for me, as a philosophy, it was about, and this has probably become more clear once you pierce through that, it's not just about not training in the gym. It was also about you're not your particular style of training. I used to have a phrase which would be like, the minute you let your training define you, you let it confine you, in that you don't need to be, if you want to do any of these things, that's great. And there's people that find a lot of motivation in identifying heavily with or whatever it is their passion or modality is, be it bodybuilding, CrossFit, whatever it may be, which is great, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
And part of that was that you don't have to go hammer and tong. Like, that's another thing. Like, that's another thing that fitness isn't. It isn't all these extreme examples. It isn't, which probably seemed odd when I was doing what I was doing at the time, but I saw myself in my own training was an experiment. It was always a case of how far can I take this with how little, and then what can we retroactively infer from that? So I guess my thing, and I don't mean this, I'm not one of these people that I'm saying, if I can do all of this, then what's your excuse? Because I really dislike that attitude towards things. Because if you don't want to work out, you don't have to. That's entirely your prerogative. There's other things in the world. So it was never a case of like, I went in a team and we won the national fitness games and all I had was a D-ball in the back of a van. No, what I'm saying is like, okay, cool. If I take it all the way here, from here, from nothing, with virtually nothing, and I can get all the way here, this gulf in between, we can all live in this space. So for me, it's like, if I can take this as far as possible, then I can, if I'm personally working with someone, I have the depth of experience to know that actually, yeah, this is possible. Or anyone watching can be and should be, and this would be my hope, that they think, I don't want to necessarily take it that far, but that does inform the fact that actually maybe I could hit whatever my goals are with just two dumbbells, with just this, with just that, whatever it may be. And I think I probably just talk about the more, and this hasn't been conscious, it's just been a case of there's less necessity to talk about the lack of, we don't need to geotag our training somewhere anymore, because we all know now, because of the state of the world over the last few years, we can train anywhere.
Yeah.
It just became more, I don't know, logical or easier to now let's talk about the other aspects of it, which are, yes, I know you see this guy and he's now training in his garden with these dumbbells, but he's perhaps his or her message is still the kind of, you just got to want it. It's about discipline, blah, blah, blah. I always try and present just a more critical eye on it and be like, yeah, I know this and that, but perhaps that isn't what it needs to look like for you. Perhaps it needs to be more, perhaps there's a place at the jumping off point, perhaps it isn't, doesn't need to be that far for you. And my own training, like when you were just describing it there, it sounded tiring. I don't, there's some days where I mainly work from home now. I still travel a lot, but I mainly work from home. There's a lot of writing. I don't do that much physical work anymore. And I've got a lovely home gym and outdoor, and I've got great stuff, and sometimes I struggle more to get out now, and we can maybe go into this now, than I did when it was like, okay, I've got 20 minute lunch break, just grab the dumbbell out there, grab the kettlebell, whatever it is, out the back of the van, take my boots off and just train barefoot. And there's probably something in habit building there or whatever it may be. But now I think I just talk more about that gap I was just talking about between, yeah, you can take it to the extreme, but let's look at this gap wherein everything else occurs. You don't, we're looking at the extreme, but that should inform you about what's possible on the run up to that. And you can get off this journey wherever you want. And the metaphor I used to kind of use was like, you light a torch and you climb it up, that you climb up the mountain with it so that people can follow the path or follow the torch if they want, but they can get off the mountain at any, or they can stop at any way up the mountain. They don't have to go all the way up the top. So what I think what we see is the people stood at the top waving the torch. We see those examples, and obviously those are the popular examples. Why wouldn't they be? And the people at the top of the mountain didn't fall there. They've had to work hard to get there. But I guess what I'm saying is you can get off at any point. Don't feel like, oh God, that looks exhausting. That looks way beyond anything I want to do. Because you can just do a version of it that's applicable to you. I'm not sure if I answered your question there, but no, it's not been, I think it's been natural to start talking about it more. And I think possibly my own, it's not to say I don't train hard anymore, because I've still done some
We see you still.
Even like role, because I've had this bit of crisis of confidence lately because I've been injured and haven't been training, and I kind of look back, and because of the job I have to do, this is kind of an odd quirk, because of the job I have to do, I'm constantly exposed to historical images of myself, right? Because I have to edit articles for a magazine and for the website, and we use still images to demonstrate movement. So I'm constantly exposed, and I joke about certain things. I'll be like, I'll say, like, refer to myself in the third person, and we're jokingly with people, I say, oh, that was PKT, that was Prime AT. And it does kind of leave you this lingering sense of like, oh God, like, but I refuse to, I still say to myself, I'm still, there's no peak, there's no prime, everything's impermanent, we all change, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I can understand how people live with those feelings of, I don't know, comparison to your previous self. But that being said, you've only got to go back months, like to the end of last year, and I've run ultra marathons and done this and I've done that. So sometimes I do have to take stock of that and be like, it's not that long ago, mate. It's not like you're in your 80s, so you're not, I'm not that guy who hasn't trained in years being like, oh, you know, when I was your age, I'm still in the mix. But yeah, I do think it's just important to talk about the more longevity based, realism based. Now, that, if I could encapsulate the crux of my philosophy, attainability and kind of democratization and making fitness available to people in the sense of you don't need to go to the gym, or in the sense of you don't need to use a lot of equipment, or in the sense of you don't need to be on a mega strict diet, or a simplification of it, a paring down. Lately that's how would describe. I want to make things as simple as possible for people, not just in the mechanics of it, but also in the sense of it doesn't have to be complicated, it doesn't have to be difficult, it doesn't have to be anything that you don't want it to be to get what you want out of it. And I think it's just been easy lately I think that's needed more stress lately, or it's just been where I've settled in terms of talking about things.
Absolutely. And one of the notes that I've written down, like before our chat, was gatekeeping fitness. I tend to see a lot of content out there, that the loudest content, the pretty aesthetic content, and I sometimes look at it and feel that it's gatekeeping fitness, in that it's upholding fitness as this one size fits all, that you can only call yourself a fitness influencer if you wear this particular brand, you do this particular modality, and you have this many followers. And I think that, like everything that you were just saying about this, it doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be within a gym. It's however you want to get to the goal that you've got is good enough. And I think that if you were to take social media echo chambers out of the whole conversation around health and fitness, and you just plop yourself into the real world for a couple of months and observe what's going on around you, fitness has so many facets. General fitness, from like chasing around the garden with your kids, that's fitness. My mum, I had a conversation with her yesterday. She spent 4 hours in the garden digging over a flower bed. Like, she's 67 years old. Yeah. She's got clay soil. Like, she's stronger than I am. I wouldn't have the stamina to do that. And it's, I think we have to be super mindful when we're in the fitness space and when we're wearing fitness hats, that we talk about it from a more objective kind of, what's the right word? Not acceptance, but accessible point of view for everybody. We're not talking about super ripped or even super fit cardio bunny type. There's always this, like you said, this identifying behavior of, I do fitness and I do look like that, or a fitness is bodybuilding or CrossFit or Zumba or legs, bums and tums class or yoga. And it's not, it's picking up the garden fork and disappearing down to the bottom of the garden and turning over your compost heap. So I think that was a bloody big ramble there, but what I'm basically saying is, for fitness to resonate with more people, we have to stop gatekeeping and refer to fitness as just something that we can all do, and it doesn't have to revolve around even wearing a pair of bloody trainers.
100%. I can't remember where I said this recently, but on the discussion of accessibility, I said we've made fitness look like a £120 pair of trainers and a £60 pair of shorts. And I'm not a complete iconoclast in that. I'll tell you these things are unnecessary, but I don't have a problem with them for the sake of having a problem with them. I think all of these things, at the end of the day, like CrossFit's a great example of it, because people can say what they like about CrossFit, but it's just added to the tide that's raised all ships. You can say what you like about expensive trainers, but it's the company, it's the people that are willing to buy the products that put the money into industries that then fund those industries that can then help people who aren't interested in the products, who can't afford the product. So I think it's a careful balancing act. Like me personally, if I have to wear, for argument's sake, if I had to wear something that's very fitnessy, I always say, I joke with people, I feel like I'm in fancy dress. I feel like I'm on PE kit, because I'm very like, I'll always just train in. Historically at work, I would just train in like thin shorts that I had on under my work trousers, and either no shoes or just whatever, or a little pair of Vans or something.
Yeah.
But again, I do think I'm the extreme end of the wedge, the thin end of the wedge. So there is gatekeeping innately, in that there's a cultural norm of what things look like that is hard to get past. And then there's, or people can certainly struggle to get past it. I feel like, oh, how can I, that's not my style, or that I'm certain because I know them and there's elements of me that are them, that there are people that can't get involved in any sort of organized form of fitness industry incorporated, as they call it, like an organized form of fitness, because it simply just doesn't look like their style.
Yeah.
So I come from, my like background growing up was not, as I said, I didn't play any team sports, but I liked the more countercultural stuff. I had a skateboard, I would BMX. And that, you kind of have a, that's almost the antithesis of the well-polished PE kit, play football on Saturday, Wednesday, go to football training Wednesday night type thing. And that can make it very hard for those people. And I think this is a culture shift that's happening for sure. But yeah, and I think that's a form of maybe innate built-in gatekeeping. It's just cultural. It is what it is. There's lots of things outside of fitness that you and I probably think, oh, I can't go and do that because that's not my scene, but actually you can just go and do it. And there are definitely people who actively uphold kind of invisible imaginary standards, and we all want to be like, this is possibly, I don't want to dive too deep into this, but we all want to be in an in-group, don't we? There's a sort of the biological evolutionary imperative to be in an in-group. But it's just sad that has to happen, or that does happen to something that's as intrinsically and important as fitness. And I think it's something that, yeah, like it's really important to, and this is something I endeavor to do myself, it's really important to have people who are showing perhaps a different example, or being, or showing that it doesn't have to look like X, Y, or Z. It can be something more comparative to what you would consider normal, or would it be inviting for you. But I also think by and large, it does require some responsibility on people's behalf to be like, for fuck's sake, I can't just not be fit because I don't like Nike and Adidas. Like, it's odd. That's weird, right? It's very weird. there's definitely gatekeeping. And one of the biggest places I see it, or have seen it, or one of the most obvious examples to me, is the way a lot of fitness professionals behave around or towards people like Joe Wicks. People who are very good at democratizing it, but he challenges many people's specialness. You've got a lot of people who consider themselves, and Joe Wicks outright says himself, like, I'm not particularly good at this. He obviously bloody is, on a greater extent, but in terms of, is he the technically best personal trainer? No, he's probably not the technically best personal trainer in any given room. And I think that side of things challenges a lot of people in the industry who literally, they uphold their identity on the fact that, and this is knowledge work, you can't get away from that. Like, fitness, being a personal trainer, being a coach, is knowledge work, because you're not doing the work for somebody.
No.
And it's a kind of, if that gets democratized, and you see this across the board, then I can see how that challenges people's, you can see how that can feel like a threat to people. And the way they, I don't think they're doing this consciously. You'd have to be pretty Machiavellian to do this consciously. But I think what they subconsciously, they rally against people like Joe Wicks, because it does kind of cast the light on, you know what, this stuff can be complicated, but it doesn't need to be. It's just, you can make it as complicated as it needs to be. The physiological, I'm a big fan of saying that the physiological boxes you've got to tick to get the majority of the benefits of fitness. I'm not talking about specific benefits, but I'm talking about the really boring ones, like you're going to live much longer, you're going to age slower, you're going to decrease all-cause mortality risks, you're going to, all those really boring things that are incredibly useful to human beings. You don't have to do a lot to get those, the benefits of exercise that are holistic, and they really are the best they really are the best benefits that we just take for granted. You don't have to, you can do the most random, not even particularly challenging stuff and get most of those benefits. And I think that's kind of I don't know how to put it. That's kind of like the man behind the curtain of Oz.
A
lot of fitness professionals. And I think if you just peel back the curtain straight away, like straight from the get-go, this is my personal philosophy. Straight from the get-go, I'll always say most things work. In fact, nearly everything works. And even out into the more complicated specific pursuits, lots of different things work. And we have evidence to support lots of different things, which kind of puts us all on, which we've got incredibly smart professionals who can't agree on basic stuff, and neither of them are, no one's wrong, and that kind of goes to show that most things work, and that really is the man behind the curtain of Oz. And I just think, just pull it back, be honest, and say, like, you could just do the most random cacophony of shit in your living room, and you would get a lot of they're not the specific benefits, but you'd get a lot of the specific benefits. But if you're interested in my take on it, here it is. And I think just by being like that, or by being like, yeah, you can get all these benefits pretty easily, but I offer this quite specific niche. If that interests you, then here I am. I think what a lot of fitness professionals have tried to do historically is act as though the whole thing is very complicated and very difficult. When actually, if you use critical thinking, if you train in the gym, go in the gym, and look at people with comparable physiques. Now, you can't tell it, or comparable fitness levels, whatever it is. You can't tell anything about the rest of their life other than through inference. Like, you don't know what they eat like, etc. But just watch them train. And you don't know their genetics, etc. But you'll see people do wildly different things and seemingly getting the same results. And that should, if you allow that to seep in, it should make you realise that, oh, quite a lot of things work. So it is... It's a game of just picking the part that you enjoy, or just experimenting on a long enough timeline, you'll try everything. But I think that's very threatening to a lot of people. A lot of people who work in industry who have, they've put all of their eggs in this basket, which is cool. Like, we all do this with whatever it is that our love is. And it seems, I guess I can see how they would subconsciously see it as maybe diminutive or diminishing of their abilities and their knowledge and their special place in the world. And this happens with everyone. It's the same as the person who likes the really niche band until they get popular, and then they don't like them anymore because that's their specialness gone. But yeah, that's one form of active gatekeeping. I would say that it does need to stop, because this thing can be daunting enough for a lot of people, especially on the back end, especially people who are unfit. They're unfit. Like, they're, without meaning to use extreme language, like people, so let's say people who are dangerously unfit, if we use fitness, the definition of fitness as the ability to fit into their environment, they are no longer fitting into the environment in the sense that they're taking years off their life. They can no longer function to their past, where they could be.
Yeah.
This, I can see how this is a very hard journey to engage on from that end. If all you're seeing is this thing's super complicated, you've got to be super dedicated, and it requires all of this special kit and one of the biggest things that I think about often, and it's one of my biggest sort of ongoing missions in life, is yes, the democratization of the information and the let's get rid of the idea that this thing has to be complicated, but the financial and social barriers to fitness. And the big, it's easy to say fitness can be free, but you need to be in a certain place before you even hear people say that. And if you load that up on top of, you've got the belief in your head, I need a gym membership and I need these expensive trainers and I need these clothes and I need the Fitbit and I need my heart rate monitor and I need a special water bottle and the supplements, and you load all this on, and but I need all of that before I can even get fit.
Yeah.
You can see how people would just think, fuck that. Really, fuck that.
And it is such a, an overlooked aspect of accessibility. Like, you're right, because looking at those from our perspective, we can go, no, you don't need the Fitbit, you don't need the special water bottle, you don't even need to wear like supportive trainers if you're just starting. None of this is necessary. But when those messages are portrayed as this is the way to get fit, well, not even that, it's just a subliminal,
just
isn't it?
Well, they're just there. It's just what it looks like, right? It's not...
That's exactly what it looks like. Yeah, representation. Yeah. But I can't help but think about, like, when I was growing up, what fitness was shown to me is, like, I grew up on Wanstead Flats, which was like a community football field, many of them. So every Saturday and Sunday through football season, there'd be all of these men and boys just getting together playing football, and that was sport, team sport for me. But my mum would go to legs, bums and tums classes, and every morning she would be there in front of the TV with Lizzie Webb doing 15 minutes of exercise before we went to school. And it was like, women did that, men played sport. So when I was growing up, I did sport at school. I loved team sport, mainly because I'm competitive and a little bit aggressive. And that was how I belonged. That's how I fitted in. I played sport. But then when I left school, it was like, okay, if I want to stay fit, I have to go and do exercise classes with other women. And I was like, but I don't look like any of them. Like, I'm 17 years old and I don't really want to be stood in a gym class wearing those weird clothes with a bunch of what I was calling middle-aged women who were probably only about 25 at the time. But, and it was like, because that was what I was seeing, that's what I'd been taught. And I think I eventually kind of just found that I worked in central London and it would take me 2 hours to get to work and 2 hours to get home, by which point I was knackered and I probably walked about 8 miles anyway. So it was like, and dancing at weekends and things like that was enough for me to stay fit, I think. And then as I got older and I looked around at what was available, I just did what everybody else did. And this idea of representation and accessibility is something that I've just paid massive amounts of attention to, because I've come away from bodybuilding and gym membership so much. And now I'm focusing on, like you just said, the boring stuff, longevity, bone density. Like, as a female, I want to make sure that I'm not brittle as I get older and that I'm strong enough to still want to walk the dogs when I'm 80 years old. So I'm exploring things like walking, and not just like your average everyday walking, but I want to hike. Yeah. I want to do things where I'm outside and just looking for other ways of enjoying what I can do to stay fit. When you've got your work hat on, your men's health fitness editor, you must have engagement with your readership. What kind of, are you getting any feedback, or are you seeing any of this playing out in the general population of like your readership? Are people asking you for more content around these other areas, or do you think that it's something that we're still seeing as like a small slow trickle away from your traditional kind of bodybuilding or fit style stuff?
I'll drill down into something at the beginning of the question there, in that something I've paid attention to over the years, you kind of have to be, when people are asking questions or you're having engagement with people, I think it's really important to pay attention to what's the, this is going to sound weird, but what's the question they think they're asking here? Or what's the question what's the answer they actually want. That's not actually to the question they're asking. And I think because of everything we've just said about these narratives that exist and the way things have traditionally been, people don't even have the tools in hand sometimes to ask the right questions. And if this sometimes is just a language game or whatever it may be, you have to be something I found of principal importance and something that I check myself on all the time is being aware of that. Yes, this person is asking this question, which I could answer very specifically, or I could give you the direct answer, but I don't think that's actually what you want to know, or it's either not attainable for you, or it's somewhere you need to start somewhere earlier. But you have to be careful that you then don't turn yourself into the kind of some sort of fucking oracle where you're like holier than thou, like, no, you don't even need to be asking that question yet. You're not ready. I kind of have to, I like to try and strike a balance as often as possible between like, oh yeah, I know what you're saying there, but either that thing isn't possible, or I don't think that's quite what you're asking, or I think like realistically what you want to get to is actually this, and this, what this person's saying is actually quite out there or just bullshit. But also being like, you know what, sometimes people do actually just want to know these things. I do want to just talk about these things. And I think the two things you picked up on there, which are great, we do the aesthetic side of things and then the CrossFit functional fitness side of things. And they've like those things seem to have gone in like a big loop wherein everyone, it suddenly became, the functional fitness CrossFit became like a counterculture and it became the new thing. And then everyone, then people start gatekeeping that. And then everyone, a lot of people jump on that because they're like, this is the new thing. And then they kind of realize, oh, actually, I did actually love a lot of this other stuff. I did love getting a pump and I love this and I love that. And you've either seen people be like, own it and be like, oh, fuck that. I missed that. I'm going back to that. I'm some of that. I'm incorporating some of that. Or some people try and backpedal a little bit and incorporate. And this, some of this is great. Some of this is very good. And try and incorporate and mix these things, which is great. I'm all for it. I do it myself. But there, sometimes there, a frank conversation I have with people is sometimes like, look, just do the thing you enjoy. Like, and maximize or minimize the aspects you do and don't enjoy, but don't feel like you have to make some sort of hybrid of the two that doesn't actually give you any enjoyment. If you want to do a bodybuilding workout and the more functional style finisher, do it. If you want to do like a big old strength and conditioning workout and tack on a bodybuilding finisher, do that. Like, that is what it is. But in terms of the bigger picture that we're talking about, yeah, I think people want it, but I don't think people either, as I say, that either people don't realise they want it or they, it's so, what's the sell? What's the sell in? I know this is so odd. I always, this is such a funny paradox, but what's the sell in living for 10 years longer? What's the sell in the last not succumbing to any, or staving off mental degeneration for the last 20 years of your life through physical activity? It's so weird because if you presented someone with two possible futures, one where they die at 50 with a six pack, or one where they live to 70 and are there fully present, compos mentis, for their great grandchildren's birthdays, I don't know which one I'd personally choose, but there's no, where's the hook there? I think that's what it is. So people just don't ask the questions. But the good thing is, and this is something I think about a lot, and this is almost like the background radiation to the work I do or try to do, or aspects of it at Men's Health, is that you get all of that by doing the other stuff. So if something really piques your interest as a short term or a medium or even long term, but it's not forever goal, like, yeah, cool, I'll sell you on that, but knowing full well that you're going to get all of the other benefits. Yeah. So it's kind of like it's hard to have one without the other, which is the good news, right? But yeah, I do think there is a rise and rise of people. And I think this is because people are living longer and this is new. Like, this is new. We're at the forefront of this. We're at the forefront of, and we are going to be at the forefront of not just people living longer, But people having to really live longer in terms of like their engagement with the world, like people aren't going to be able that once upon a time, I would talk about stay fit so you can enjoy your retirement. Like that's a nice sell. That's a nice thing to talk about. Yeah. And I think that's a little bit of extrinsic motivation for people who need it. You can't just say, well, obviously you want to live for, you want to be fit for as long as you can. I think we are going to be in the unique position of saying you need to stay fit because you're still going to need to work at 70. There's a very real, it's something our parents' generation didn't face. And this is something I philosophically think about a lot now. And occasionally keeps me up at night. This thought of like, I don't have to. And as I've worked for a long time running a business, as I said, in a very laborious, body intensive business, and you were faced every day, and conversations were had. You'd go and contract to another company, or there'd be other companies with you alongside you working together. It's a very nice, beautiful network, but there'd be older people there who were fucked,
yeah,
from the job,
yeah.
And that the conversation would always be like the thing that proliferated is, oh, I can't keep doing this forever. I can't keep doing this forever. That's the atmosphere. And yeah, then I'd sit with, like, you know what? Some people are going to have to. Some people are going to have to live forever. And this is something I think I'm not uniquely positioned, but because I think about a lot of stuff in fitness and I have to write about it, which takes a lot of rumination, but I'm also have been subject to seeing that. It's something I think about often that, yeah, it's not going to be a case of, yeah, stay fit so you can play with your grandkids. Stay fit so you can still go for a walk in Gran Canaria when you go on holiday at 65. No, it's stay fit because you're still going to be working at 65. And I think that's where a lot more of the training plans, etc., and styles of training and looking at and talking about and making kind of accessible and omnipresent so people can see them, training that incorporates aspects of longevity, etc., isn't just good, isn't just important, but it's going to be critical.
Yeah.
Because A, people are going to need it, and B, there is the double-edged sword of training is that there is injury risks, etc., etc., associated with training. And I think we all know someone who used to train and now they don't do anything because they got injured or they did this and they did that. And so I think another thing is having these other things that aren't as, if you get injured because through misadventure of doing super hardcore bodybuilding training, but all you know is super hardcore bodybuilding training, and you've got an injury that really is debilitating. It means you can't do that to that capacity anymore. You may never train again. So now not only are you injured, but you're degenerating, you're rolling backwards, and that's a bad place to be in. So I do think that we need more of this. I mean, it's definitely something I focus on a lot, is talking about these things, creating these, like trying to balance out and create these resources. And I will say, mental health are very good for that. And I think it's largely due to our target demographic ends up in a certain age bracket because that's the age bracket that has disposable income.
What is the age bracket for mental health?
Professionals 35 to 55 and beyond now, as for all the things, for all the reasons I said.
Yeah.
Once you get out beyond a certain age, it becomes a demographic that kind of have the privilege to still, they're not the people that were, I don't know, to say coal miner is too dated a reference, but I have worked with coal, you know, people who were dynamite in mines before and they're fucked. But, you know, those people that haven't run their bodies into the ground, it's that there is an inherent, I know people dislike this and I fall somewhere down the middle, but there is an inherent degree of, you don't need it, but it tends to be there, degree of privilege to being actively fit. And you can take that how you want it. You can take that on a really zoomed out sense. We're in the top 1.1% of people to have ever lived on earth in that we can worry about these things. Once upon a time, we know where the term fitness comes from. We know what fitness is. We know why we have fitness. And that is so that you don't die in an evolutionary sense. So to even have the luxury of choice is a luxury.
Absolutely.
But you can zoom in a bit further and say, and this is an area I dwell in, the socioeconomic barriers. Yes, you can say that fitness is free, But you have to be in a place to even know that, to even see that, and to even be able to prioritize it. And yeah, to be in a culture where you're able to prioritize it. And that's a big thing that I think people miss, that on an individual level, you can say, and I was lucky, my dad was a soldier and then he was a firefighter. So as much as I didn't play sports, and my dad didn't play sports, being physically fit was always presented as something that was not, it was normal. It was normal to, you go out for a run, or there'd always be weights in the garage or whatever it was. But for many people, they grow up in an environment where it's not like that. It's an absolute wellness swamp of the culture is, and this is the culture I come from, so I feel comfortable to say this, the culture is like, oh, you fuck all of that, I ain't got time for all of that. And I think that's something we're seeing changing, because there are people doing a good job at democratizing it, and it warms my heart when you I've seen these events that Joe Wicks runs, where it is just, I say this with the utmost respect, because my mum is one of them, working class mums, taking their kids, like taking their, like, without meaning to be rude, like taking their little bit chubby kids to go to this live event and do it. And that for me is like, that's what we want. Because as you said before, there was this gulf between, this is what people of this sex and this age bracket do, and this is what people of this sex and this age bracket do. And we're seeing that kind of collapse in on itself, which is great. And there's still problems within that, undoubtedly, but it's amazing to see that happen, I think, and I'm all for it, and I think it's going to be necessary. And I think just that maybe on a business sense, perhaps there isn't enough, in a financial sense, maybe there isn't a big enough slice of the pie for everyone. But for me, I'm in a fortunate position to be able to say this, for a virtue sense, we just have to be doing it. We have to be putting out these messages. And I think it is a case of, I didn't even really want to drill down into it, but on the subject of sex, of gender, like, yeah, we need more representation in every area and for every body shape, race, creed, colour of women, as well as men, and to just be doing their thing. To just be doing, like, you don't, I think a lot of people now get paralysed because there's so much status to be gained from playing virtue games. I think a lot of people get paralyzed by that. They don't want to play that game. They don't want to utilize or leverage their identity politics, whatever it might be. And although there's people that are more than happy to do that, obviously, there are also people that really don't want to do it. So I think if you're one of those people, just, you don't need to do it. Just go out and do your thing and be there and be present doing it. You don't have to lean into it. You don't have to be a martyr. Don't feel pressured by it. And I think this is something we see, but to get kind of back on point there, we need representation, but that can be organic. I don't even think there's a lot of people that don't even like that word anymore. So just, if you are a 40 plus woman who looks like X, just go out and do your thing and share it.
Yeah.
If you are a we need that. That's what we need. That's the kind of, it doesn't have to be deliberate. It doesn't have to be, not, I don't want to say manufactured, but you don't have to lean into
it.
Or you don't have to leverage on the fact that there's loads, I joke all the time, like there's loads of little niches I could potentially fit into. Things I do, things I'm interested in that I probably don't even talk about on social media, but I could take that one thing and call myself that one thing trainer, right? And you can create your niche. And there's nothing wrong with people who do this. Like, I have loads of little niches that sometimes tie in nicely with fitness. And I could easily leverage those things. But I think it doesn't make me feel uncomfortable. I just don't care to do it.
Yeah.
But I think for some people, they don't want to do that. And if that's you, cool. Then you don't have to lean into it. But do be there doing your thing. And do share it with the world. Because what did I say the other day? There's a saying in CrossFit, and I think it comes from a guy called Pat Sherwood, who's one of the OGs in CrossFit, runs CrossFit Linchpin. And it's like a saying of, nobody cares, work harder. And it's kind of a war cry to drop your ego and just get on with it. But I wrote it down and I crossed out nobody care. And this was, I would have put this on my story, but this is when I was off of social media, so completely wasted. I crossed out nobody and wrote somebody. And all I meant by that was somebody cares. Like somebody cares. Somebody is looking and going, yeah. Oh, he doesn't wear the trainers everyone else wears. Or he's got the same hairstyle. Yeah, it's arbitrary. Oh, he's got the same hairstyle as me. Or he listens to the same music. I listen to. And you don't need to make it a thing. You don't need to become the Blink 182 trainer. Just do it. Just live it. Just breathe it. Just do it. And somebody will see that. And somebody, the privilege and responsibility you have is you will then be you'll be that. You might give someone a little glimmer of, you know what? Okay, maybe I can do this fitness thing. And that's why I think it's so important for all of us to be doing it. And just doing it. If you feel any pressure, just do it. I have very strong feelings about certain aspects of women in fitness, but there's enough 30 something male voices talking at once. I don't need to. You engage me on it, I'll talk to you all day long about it.
Yeah.
And I will, when challenged, do whatever's necessary and whatever, but you don't feel as though you have to lean into every.
Yes, you can support and you can champion these things, but you don't have to be the full on, I take full responsibility and spokesperson of such and such. Yeah, yeah, I get it. I think it's the sharing aspect that some people feel an awkwardness around, or almost like a dismissive of, nobody cares about that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need to share that. Nobody cares about me as a 15-year-old disabled girl sharing that I'm doing that.
Exactly that.
Or nobody cares that we're a bunch of Hindu girls playing football. Like, nobody will, or will get XYZ response. And it's all of these things that I think are really, I'm starting to see pockets of everyone. If you look for these things, you obviously find them. It's that conscious awareness, isn't it? But it's encouraging to know that these conversations are happening and that fitness is getting a new brand, if you like. And Joe Wicks, I think, I don't think he even knows half of the hate he gets within his own industry, because I don't think he cares enough.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I've seen him speak on it before, and he kind of just says that. Essentially, it's like, what am I going to do about it? I'm not going to, it's a very good mindset from that point of view of, what can I do? I'm sorry, everyone. I'm sorry the millions of pounds in initiatives I've helped with, and I'm sorry all the individual lives I've impacted, but I can't do it anymore because someone with a master's degree in kinesiology doesn't like the way I do burpees.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous because he's got a new campaign out at the moment that I've seen where he's giving every single teacher in the UK access to his app for free so that they can then take that into the schools and classrooms where they teach and basically educate the children that they influence.
Yeah, amazing.
And I can't see how anybody can look at that and think that is inherently non-fitness or the wrong thing to do.
In any way a bad thing. And I especially don't see how you can do that while simultaneously charging £100 for a 60-minute personal training. I see exactly how, because one is very challenging to the other, isn't it? One is very challenging to the other. And I think that's it. But people have got to get over that. People have got these things can coexist.
One doesn't count or discredit the other.
I don't think many Michelin star chefs spend much time on Twitter shitting on people who work in McDonald's. Do they?
They really don't.
And if you're confident in what you do, then so be it. And look, if this is all going to die out in favour of democratisation, the analogy is always libraries and the internet, then so be it. That's what it has to be. That really is in the great grand scheme of the human race. That's the knock we have to take. If you say to me now, look, we've created some miracle genie, going to give everyone fitness, but it's going to mean you're out of a job. What sort of ethically bankrupt nutcase would I have to be to say, no, thank you, because I'd rather keep my Instagram followers? Like, No.
Yeah, it's madness,
Yeah,
isn't it?
clearly that would be ethically wrong to do. And I just think, like I said before, focus on what you're doing, doing the best version of what you're doing, and people are going to gravitate towards that. And I think it's very easy on the somewhat the social media apologist, because I think it's a tool, and I think how we use it is far more important than the platform itself. But I think it's very easy on social media to get sucked into, I need to be doing this and I need to be doing this. And a really just obvious salient example to me, and I think I just want to say this because I think it underlines and better demonstrate something I was saying earlier about not having to worry about leveraging what you're doing, is that all of the current amazing, not to take away from that, talk and climate and atmosphere around mental health. And if you are or try to be a critical thinker, I think scratch deep and you can see how actually some of that can be paralyzing. I'm talking from personal experience here. Some of how all of this narrative is presented in terms of what it's got to look like and what you've got to do and all that can be paralyzing to people who are suffering. And in fitness, there's this big drive, which is great. And I'm 100% sure that it's literally saved people's lives. And as I said, as I said, in the great scheme of human beings, has to be important. But this idea that we all need to come forward and be open and forthright and public about our struggles with mental health. If you're comfortable doing that, that's great. But I worry that people are going to be, in the same way that I just said, people are going to think, oh, I don't want to go out and lean into my little niche. People are going to be like, I don't really want to talk about my mental struggles because that means doing Instagram reels about it and doing this and doing that. But it doesn't have to. I'm just saying that to just underscore the thing of like, you don't have to become the face of something. If you are the 15-year-old disabled girl in fitness, you don't have to become the face of that thing. And I almost find something very often very disingenuous about people who set out to do that. There's more than a whiff of ego there, isn't there? But if you're sitting there, and this is, it's in line with the thing we were saying about gatekeeping. If you're sitting there thinking like, look, I do fitness and I'm in this quite unique position, it's quite a unique niche, and I'm really into my fitness and I'm actually well up on it and I can present good information. Don't think like, oh, but I don't want to put myself out there and be the, I don't know, like just name three random characteristics that trait. No, I don't want to be the, don't feel as though you have to become the spokesperson for that. Just do it. Just go out there and do it and be it. And that in and of itself is enough. And I was on a shoot, I was running a shoot for Men's Health yesterday, and we're shooting what is ostensibly my section in a mag of all the workouts. And we've had a huge culture shift over the few years in the type of models and a representation in the magazine. And this isn't some like corporate bloody quota driven thing. It's just by nature. It's just something that's evolved organically through the people who work at the magazine and interests and our personal feelings on certain things. And we got this great model that had this guy Lewis yesterday, and he's a sound guy. It was such a fun day. They're always one of the funnest days of my month is directing these shoots. And he was like covered in tattoos. I mean, like face, yeah, tattoos on the palm of his hands. He used to be a tattooist. He had this great purple rain tattoo on his leg. He was his mixed race guy. And none of that's done deliberately. Like, we don't check, like we don't even really, we use an agency who provide athletic looking models, but we don't tick boxes.
You don't specify.
And then for me, look, yeah, I'm looking at these shots coming up on the screen during the day at the shoot just to check the form and stuff like that. And one of my like big secret missions at the mag is we call them stick men, when it's just like, it's like how to perform a squat, and it's a guy stood up and it's a guy squatting down, and we call them stick men. And one of my like side quests slash secret missions is to completely overhaul all the stick men. So they're all really good quality movements and that kind of thing. And I had this wave of like, these pictures look so cool. And because of what we were shooting, Lewis is going to be in like three issues in the row of the mag for fitness content. And again, like tick, hit these small niches that Lewis could fall into. And it's not because of any of them niches. He's just a cool guy in and of himself. But I was looking and I was thinking, like, yes, like if there's the type of guy that is into certain parts of this, of what it is that Lewis represents and what Lewis looks like and the image he has, who might be like, oh, I really want to get fit, but in my peer group or in my culture, we just do X, Y, Z. We don't do it. If they see this image and be like, oh, he's a cool guy, I'm going to give this a go. That for me is very rewarding work to be doing. And I think that, as I say, just do it. Just put the images out there. Just do you, because somebody does care. And somebody might see it and go, oh, actually, maybe I could do some burpees.
Yeah, I love that. I love that somebody does care, because even if you're doing this in your own home around your children or your grandchildren or your neighbour, and they see you doing something, it gives like the exact same message. Somebody does care. And as parents, it's a responsibility to demonstrate and to be an example of what you want your children to grow up as. That's how I see parenthood. Parenthood for me has very high responsibility of, if I'm going to make a decision about doing something, is this how I want my children to see their future? If I do this, my children, they kids learn by example. They copy what they see around them. And I think that if even just taking the kids for a bike ride at the weekend, taking them down to the park to play football. In multicultural communities, when I lived in East London, we would have Indian festivals on Wanstead Flats, and you'd see massive groups of Indian families, and they'd be bringing the cricket sets and they'd have all of their picnic stuff. And it was like, this is like amazing to see. That's community. That is that sense of belonging. So it doesn't necessarily, like you say, it doesn't, you don't have to become the figurehead for your particular tribe, shall we say. You don't have to take on that responsibility. But if you want, if you have this desire to share your journey, know that you are also demonstrating and becoming an example to other people like you.
Yeah.
It's not a hat you have to wear or a title that you have to give yourself, but it will come as an organic kind of behavior.
Don't feel pressured by it. Don't feel, if nothing else, you're just adding to the numbers of people of your particular demographic that are doing this thing and creating the, it's not creating the opportunity, it's creating the surface area for people to see that, oh yeah, like the fact that at bottom, like we said from the very beginning, the crux of it is we have made, the royal we have made fitness look like a certain thing.
Yeah.
And the more diversity in how that looks, and I don't mean the diversity, people are going to roll their eyes at that statement. I mean that in the very literal sense of as much as possible, as much different, diverse, from diversity of thoughts and opinions to as much as skin color or gender. The more people of those catchments there are, the more surface area there is for someone like you to see that and go, ah, it's not all white men with gelled hair and expensive trainers.
Yeah, but it's really important as well to kind of, for me to acknowledge the fact that when we have white men with gelled hair constantly at the top, they should be opening the doors for the people below them to kind of give them a hand, if you like. Not consciously, again, this isn't a call to arms or a call to action. This is just be aware that you have the ability to give platforms or acknowledge other areas for conversation. So just get involved. It doesn't, again, that does, you don't have to become the figurehead for giving platforms, but having that awareness of being curious and exploring other diverse opinions, thoughts, even modalities, and just placing yourself where you can learn more too. I think it's important that we recognize, and I don't like to use the word privilege, because again, there'll be fucking eyes rolling left, right and center and rattling around people's heads, but everybody has some level of privilege.
Yeah.
Everybody does.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I think that, like, to your point, sometimes opening doors and enabling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't have to even be anything active. It can just be something as simple as just shutting up once in a while. As someone who talks way too much, the greatest thing I can do to create more space is just shut up every once in a while. Let someone else, and then this is something I actively try. And no, I have that in my like I think I said it once already. Like, there's enough people who look like me and do things I do talking. So sometimes I just think I really need to dip my wick here. And I don't mean that in the sense of I don't have to do anything. I mean that in the sense of clear the space. And again, this ties in nicely of what we were saying about you don't have to become the poster boy for it. You don't have to go. That doesn't mean, like, because there people take it to extreme, and we can argue all day long about equality of opportunity and equality of outcome, but sometimes it can, it doesn't mean you have to say I'm standing down from my job as men's health fitness editor because I think someone who's XYZ that I'm not should do it. It doesn't mean doing that. It just, and it doesn't even mean, and some people will argue this, I have to be careful, but it doesn't even mean going out of your way to do radical. In fact, I think if you do have just strong, fairly centered morals, you'll never need to. Because like I said about the shoot yesterday, et cetera, et cetera, none of that's deliberate or manufactured. None of that's deliberate or manufactured at all. That's just the result of the people who are in the mix and in that chain of making decisions subconsciously have the
it's an open-mindedness, non-biased worldview.
There's something very sticky to me, and I don't know if it's just me, but sometimes certain things are done that are very see-through, and the people at the top are actually just, they don't give a shit about the moral implications. They're just rubbing their hands together because they know it's going to cause an argument at the bottom.
Yeah, performative and combative.
Exactly that. And that puts a chill up my spine, so to speak. And I know we're on, this is very much a radioactive subject, isn't it? But as I say, like, if it is something that you're like, oh God, but I don't know how to do this right, or I don't know, blah, blah, blah. And it's scary. It's fucking scary because there are aspects of mob culture involved. And nobody, sometimes people don't even want to get in the mix. Just make some space sometimes, passively. Just shut up.
And I think, you're absolutely right. People are fearful of if they do dip their toe into anything that's different, or they're unsure of, or they know is inflammatory, they're terrified of getting things wrong. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, we probably will get shit wrong. Like, talking about gender, talking about race, talking about able-bodiedness, anything neurodivergence, it's putting myself into that conversation. And I know minimal stuff about any of this, but I'm also open to, I need to know more about this because it's important for me. So I know that it almost feels like putting your head above the parapet.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly the right
shot with an arrow.
Yeah, that's right. And so what you've got on both sides is people who are entrenched and people in the middle who are shit scared of catching the ire of either group, and you are even going back. This is just a random tangent. I remember years and years ago, we're talking like pre-Instagram stories. So this would have been a post, won't have been stories. I put something up jokingly, but it was a picture. It was from a previous World's Strongest Man or one of those high caliber strongman events, that some sort of champion, it would have been televised type thing. They were doing farmers walks, farmers carries, but they had this little harness contraption and they had a pig in each hand, a live pig. I didn't give it a second thought. It didn't look uncomfortable for the, it was like a harness type thing. And I think I posted it with something like I don't even know if I said on the menu, because I could see how that would be inflammatory, but incendiary. But it was something like, I'm going to do farmer's walks this weekend, was essentially the inference. And then I had a couple of people basically take umbrance with the image, which I actually, in hindsight, then I was like, yeah, fair enough. Like, unless I didn't need to, it's no skin of my nose to take it down type thing.
Yeah.
But I made the mistake of just putting another picture up. It was a picture of me just doing farmer's carriers with the same caption almost within an hour. And obviously yep. then I had people saying, people who must have seen the previous comments, etc., saying, you're a pussy for taking that down, blah, blah, blah. And this would have been before anyone. Now someone would say, I'm virtue signaling or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't give in to cancel culture. But even at the time, I was like, to the guy, I was like, well, you're giving me just as much shit. The fact of the matter is, neither of you parties would actually talk to me like that in real life.
Yes, it's true.
Your issue isn't actually with me, it's with them, and it is what it is. And I can see how people, that, anyway, I'm saying this to illustrate, I can see how that makes people afraid, not just to not take a stance, but to say anything at all. And if you are much in the vein of just go out and do your thing, sometimes that can mean actually staying in your lane and just doing your thing and leaving space out. Yeah. Outside of it, and this becomes really obvious when we're talking about, I don't think you shouldn't have an, I don't think there's anyone that can tell me I can't have or express an opinion in certain, on certain topics. I mean, yeah, of course, it's only a very wise person who can observe something without forming an opinion, but I think if there's enough people with similar opinions to me sharing those, then I don't really need to share it and just be another voice. And I guess what I'm trying to say is nobody needs to read an essay from me on why or on, fuck, I'm trying to think of something that's not going to be incredible, like someone's going to take umbrance with. But I don't know, I'll go with one that probably will catch me some flack. But nobody needs to read an essay on me on the dangers of the privilege of men to be able to run at night. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I fully acknowledge that, like, to the point I've got a 14-year-old daughter. I've had this conversation with people before, and there's people on the other side of the camp. Oh, statistically speaking, you're more likely to be attacked as a man. Cool. I'll send my daughter to Tesco's at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm not going to come out with 4 tips for women for running safely at night. You know what I mean? Like,
it comes down to intent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes down to intent, doesn't it? Because if you were to share that from a place of, I'm a father to a 14-year-old, this affects me because it affects her. Yeah. But people don't have that insight.
But see, Tony, the thing is, even then, there's an argument. I'm not saying I agree with this, but I've seen people make this argument that I shouldn't need, actually, maybe I do agree with it. I shouldn't need to be a father to a daughter to recognize it. And you can take this argument as far as you like, because, and that is kind of gatekeeping in a way.
Yes, no, it absolutely is.
Yeah, yeah, I shouldn't need to, oh, you're only thinking about this because now you've got a daughter. Well, to be honest, yes.
Yeah, but this is how awareness is created.
Yeah, I don't have the conscious experience. It has never occurred to me. And I know that's my privilege, and I recognise that. That's my privilege. We live like right next to each other, right? So not the Flitch, but Jack's Lane, which is up by Leicester.
Yeah, I know Jack's Lane. Yeah, it goes around the back of my house.
Yeah, I was running like 5K down there, and it was dark to the point where it was dangerous regardless of your gender. Or I didn't need a murderer to be in there. I could fall down a ditch.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, fucking hell, man. Like, imagine that. I just had a moment of, and again, people are going to roll their eyes at this, but seriously, don't, and sit with it for a minute and you'll see what I mean. But this feeling of just immense, like, it's insane that half of the world are going to have a completely different experience to me right now here. It's insane, like, and there's people that go, what's the difference? Like, if someone wants to attack you and whatever, like, are you really much better off? But yeah, of course, irrelevant of if I am any better off. The fact of the matter is, I'm not having the, so this always makes me think of the Sean Locke bit where he talks about if you call the AA and you're a woman on your own, they come out sooner, which obviously I agree with. But he does this bit, or he used to do this bit, where he'd say, like, what am I supposed to do? Just stand there punching off? Like, he just makes this joke that he's no better off. But regardless of wherever or not you are, the fact of the matter is we're having very different conscious experiences at that moment in time. And that's the difference. The difference isn't the actual mechanics of, am I more equipped to fight off attackers in the night? Am I more likely to be attacked? There's statistics that are going to skew it one way or the other. They're all irrelevant. The fact of the matter is I'm running down there thinking about the fact that I'm not thinking about, oh God, I hope I don't get attacked. But that's my privilege it's a cognizant intellectual exercise, not the grips of fear.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of like the gatekeeping aspect of what you said, like men, it's not that men are ignorant of this. It's that it's a naivety from lived experience, from not having that conscious kind of awareness of why would, if you're not a woman, have these discussions, how would you know?
And it kind of falls apart because you can drill that down as far as you like. You can just start layering on. If someone says that to you, you can pick out something that they're not cognizant of. Like you can drill that down as so far. And then you can, that's how people who are inclined to do so will go about debunking the privilege intersectional stacking, right? Because you can drill that down to the point where, you know, at what point do you say, okay, you're so far, you're at the bottom of the ladder, you're so far down the rungs that you're allowed to talk about anything. Like at what point, it's silly to think that there's some, it's not, it's organic.
And then the conversation doesn't go forward from there, does it? It becomes a competition of who...
It's a virtue game it's all philosophical and intellectual. There's no real... where does the rubber meet the road with that? So that's what I'm cognizant of, is like, what can I actually do in this sphere? Let's start right at the top, is like, don't be a rapist. Like, obviously, like, let's start there. Yeah. And then down from there, have serious conversations with my male friends.
Yeah.
About this exact conversation, really, of like, hey, just be aware of that. And then from there, like, hey, be a better example to young men. If you got young boys, raise them better. Like you can keep going all the way down there before you even have to get to anything where you're being an air quotes ally and would have to worry about anyone sticking your head above the parapet, and people on one side being like, oh, you're virtue signaling, and people on the other side being like, oh, you're taking up space. You get a long way down there, and it's tough because in my personal experience, I remember going back and forth thinking about offering to, I remember I said, like, I ended up just doing it, but going backwards and forth of putting on my story. This was around the time Sarah Everett was tragically killed, and putting on my story, like, look, if you're a fucking guy, acknowledge that you don't get scared when you run down the road. Just acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Don't play the silly game of, well, I could still be that. And if you know any women that normally go out for a run and you just find yourself thinking, oh, they haven't shared that they've been running or anything recently, you don't have to be like, hey, if you're worried about getting murdered on a run, I'll go out for a run with you. Just surreptitiously ask if they fancy going for a run at some point. Like,
yeah,
that's what you don't have to, it doesn't have to be a thing, but there is a point at which you do have to risk putting your head above the parapet and accepting that. You risking someone saying, fuck off your virtue signaler, or, oh, you're only worried about it now. It took a girl being killed for you to even be worried about it. You have to, that is pretty inconsequential versus your female friend who sat at home thinking, I can't afford a treadmill, but I'm too scared to go out for a run. You can put your neck out a little bit and risk a little bit of mob bite back that you'll forget about in a day
The word that you said that really like says it all is that acknowledgement, is acknowledge that someone's lived experience, don't argue with them.
Yeah, exactly that.
And that applies to every kind of lived experience where there's this huge debate going on. You've got trans, you've got gender, you've got racial, you've got socioeconomic. It's that if somebody's standing there and telling you this has happened to them, and it's caused this response, how dare you say that hasn't happened? You're imagining.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
that is so audacious and just it. I'm like, wow. Yeah. Who died and made you king?
The good thing about being a man is no one has to die and make us the king. We are taught from a young age. That's our place in the world. We can be 3.5 billion kings.
Yeah.
But you know, getting to that. But I'm doing it now. I'm trying to be self-aware and be like, oh, look at you espousing your philosophy safe and sound from your living room. But yeah, I do. Yeah, like you say, just acknowledge it and leave. Just if... at bottom, just leave space where you need to, and you can go a long way down the line of just be good and avoid bad. It's a pretty good recipe.
Yeah, don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick is, yeah, exactly that. exactly that. And I think in the fitness space, whatever it is you're doing, keep doing it, because you're going to, there's every likelihood that you might be a beacon to someone else in a similar whatever it is to you, and leave space for other people, and don't consciously push away or somehow invalidate other people's places in this community. I think that really is it. That really is it. Your success, I don't want to say success, but your place in the doing of fitness is in no yeah. way threatened by someone else being in this space. We're not fighting for anything here.
Yeah, it doesn't run out. It isn't a finite amount of people to help get fit or talk to.
Yeah, and there isn't even a finite amount of kind of words in which we can define what fitness is. Or there's no like, oh, I need it to look like this because otherwise I can't do it. No. But, or if that's how you feel, guess what? That's how they feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think just there's room for everybody, isn't there?
Absolutely. And I think on that note, it's been an awesome discussion. I have really enjoyed this. If people want to read more of your work, find out more about who you are and what you do, where is the best place for people to find and connect with you?
Oh, I guess Instagram's the shop front, isn't it? I'm at theandrew.tracy on Instagram, and then everything. I've done one post in 30 days and I haven't even been on there today. It was quite liberating. Yeah, everything can be found through there, or every month in every good seller of magazines, and even some bad sellers of magazines, you'll find Men's Health, and I will have some words in there. And generally, if this is what you're looking for, generally I try and make it so that in the PT section of the mag, there is a set of workouts crafted in such a way that they would last you all month. And I try and, I always try and make that available. And then in the name of accessibility, people can walk in and get a month's worth of programming off of for £4 in a petrol station. That's kind of where, that's why I'm there. That's one of the main attractions for me, is being able to do that and put that out. Even if no one does it, it's out there. Yeah, that's it really. And theandrew.tracy Instagram. I do have a website, youwantyourgymmembership.com. There's some long form essays and musings, and I also host the Bulldog Gear podcast, which has had some amazing guests, yourself included, and I'm very privileged.
Yeah, you do get to speak to some amazingly interesting people on there. I'll link to all of those things: your Instagram, the You Are Not Your Gym membership, Men's Health magazine, and the Bulldog Gear podcast. I will put the links in the show notes for everybody. Thank you so much for giving up some of your afternoon to come and chat with me. I massively appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me, Tanya.
You're welcome. You have just listened to the Conversations with a Coach podcast with me, your host, Tanya Filer. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Check out the show notes for resources and links to previous episodes and the YouTube channel. Don't forget to share and tag on your social posts. And thank you for listening.